All right, everyone, we're back, and we have on the line Doug Valentine. Doug, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks for inviting me on your show, Len.
Great. Doug is author of several good books. The last one, I believe, was TDY.
That's right.
Boy, that was a thriller. I still say you should make that into a movie because that kept me up all night. I made the mistake opening that book about 11:30, 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. I'm still going through it. And what a thriller it was.
Well, thanks for saying that. I wish somebody would make it into a movie.
Well, maybe I'll end up doing that if nobody else will.
That'd be great.
We've had Doug on a few times before, so people who've gone through the archives will know him. Why don't you give us a brief synopsis of your writing career?
My first book is called The Hotel Tocklobin. That was published in 1984 and 85 and 86, and it was it's the story of my father. My father was a prisoner of war in World War II in a Japanese camp in the Philippines, and had some very extraordinary experiences there. I don't want to give the book away in case somebody wants to read it, but it was based on the revelations that the things that my father had revealed to me in the course of writing that book, that I actually then got interested in becoming a researcher and digging into the covert operations of the government. And after I wrote the Hotel Tocklobin, I wanted to do a book about the Vietnam War, and I wrote a book called The Phoenix Program. That book was published in 1990 and 1992. And like the Hotel Tocklobin, it's recently been republished by iUniverse.com, so anybody who wants to get copies of any of my books can just go either to my website and then get directions to the iUniverse.com, which sells my books.
Right, I'll put a link. To your website.
Pardon me?
I'll put a link to your website right on our interview here.
Okay.
So people listening can find it quickly.
Okay, and the Phoenix Program is very relevant. The Phoenix Program was a CIA program which was designed to neutralize the Viet Cong infrastructure. The CIA, unlike the military, was not engaged in combat with military forces. They weren't even involved in combat with the Viet Cong. The CIA is a civilian organization, and its targets are civilians. And the Viet Cong infrastructure was the civilian infrastructure, the support mechanism, including Communist Party leaders, administrators, couriers, security and intelligence people, all civilians, mostly in the political field, who supported the Viet Cong. And the CIA created the Phoenix Program specifically to go out and neutralize these people through kidnappings, indefinite detention in interrogation centers, assassination, imprisonment, the whole smear. And the thing that's really important and relevant about Phoenix is that Phoenix is the basis for the Department of Homeland Security. Phoenix coordinated 25 existing intelligence programs in Vietnam under the CIA. The Army had intelligence programs, the Navy had intelligence programs, everybody, the South Vietnamese had intelligence programs, and just like the Department of Homeland Security is going to coordinate all the different agencies in the war on terror at home, that's exactly what Phoenix did in South Vietnam. And it's eerie just how everything that Phoenix did, the department is happening in the United States right now. The detention without trial of terrorist suspects, kidnapping of people. You see it in Israel. They just assassinate people right and left who are political leaders, and nobody in the world says anything about it. And all this stuff is starting to happen. Some of it already is happening right here in the United States, and it's the Phoenix Program come home to roost. So, if your listeners are interested in knowing what's happening, I highly recommend that they read the Phoenix program or go to Counterpunch, which is an internet magazine, which has published a couple of articles that I've written describing how Phoenix is the basis for the Department of Homeland Security.
Right, the similarities with the TIPS programs and even Nazi Germany, where people are said, turn in your neighbor, turn in your mother and father, you know?
Well, yeah, Phoenix was responsible for a program called the Hamlet Informant Program, TIP, instead of TIP. You know, I mean, it was the same thing. They had any internal security operation depends on three things. It depends on informants. It depends on interrogations, and it depends on penetration. Informants are generally the easiest way to get information, but the least reliable, because what happened in the Phoenix program in Vietnam and what's going to happen in the United States once people start spying on their neighbors is, in Vietnam, people didn't, you know, Nguyen didn't like Tran because he was having an affair with his wife, so he put his name on the Phoenix blacklist, you know. And that's the same thing that would happen here in the United States. So, you know, the dog, your neighbor's dog is coming onto your property, so you rat him out to John Ashcroft as being a terrorist suspect, you know. Put the guy's name into the system, and the next thing you know, the guy's name appears on a list somewhere.
Yeah,
you know,
or better yet, it even sounds like all you got to do is plant something. Reminds me of that Al Jahiz story where I think Nixon had planted some microphone film in the guy's pumpkin.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You know, so
the possibilities are endless, and there's a book's worth of possibilities of all the things that are going to happen. The interrogations that Phoenix relied on. The CIA, the interrogations are generally considered the best way of getting information. And as you know, ever since September 11th, people have been talking about using torture as a legitimate means of getting information from terrorist suspects. And it's been happening, and it's going on. And what the CIA did in South Vietnam was they built a secret interrogation center in each of the 44 provinces. And these secret interrogation centers were staffed by the special branch of the Vietnamese police, which is like our FBI. And they were advised by the CIA. The CIA had a company, Pacific Architects and Engineers, that built all these secret interrogation centers. And they would go out and they would round up suspects and through their informants. And they would bring them into the interrogation centers without any charges being leveled against them. And this is exactly what's happening now in the United States.
So, yeah, we just want to talk to you.
Terrorist suspects are detained, can be detained indefinitely without ever going to court and without ever having charges. And this whole process and this whole system was developed by the CIA in the Phoenix program in Vietnam. So, you know, there's a lot to learn about it. And then the third thing, penetrations, is another thing that the Department of Homeland Security is going to be doing. According to Ashcroft, the Attorney General there are, and also according to Tom Ridge, who's going to be the Director of the Homeland Security, Al-Qaeda and this international conspiracy of terrorists have planted terrorist cells throughout the United States. This is one of the reasons they want to have informants everywhere, is so that they can, you know, find these terrorist cells. But once they find them, what they really ultimately want to do is penetrate them. You know, they want to actually turn one of the guys in the cell into a double agent, so they can, you know, follow it back up the chain of command and get to Osama bin Laden. But again, what this will allow the FBI and the CIA and the military to do in the United States is to start infiltrating peace organizations,
unions,
war organizations. They're going to be able to start, you know, running penetration operations into companies, the Defense Department companies that, you know, have that produce anthrax. You know, I mean, it's just going to be, it's going to be a police state is what it's going to be. And people got to wise up to it real fast.
Yeah, it's almost happening so fast that people haven't got a time to react. Never mind, I wonder about people getting arrested without any charges.
Yeah, the hand is faster than the eye. And I'm not convinced myself that the terror attacks of September 11th weren't a provocation. As you know, the anthrax...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Murders have never been solved.
Yeah, or investigated, really.
Which pretty much confirms that, you know, I mean, it was the CIA or it was the FBI or somebody working for them.
Yeah, it was military-grade anthrax, right? That's been proven, military-grade anthrax.
Yeah, in fact, I wrote a little article about that, you know, and that's on Counterpunch, too, and it's the only people in the world who had access to this specific type of anthrax that was sent to the Democratic senators and killed a couple of people were people in the CIA and the military. So, I mean, there was no way in the world it could have been Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden. It was somebody here in the United States who had the security, the top secret security clearances to get in to actually, you know, scarf up a little bit of these anthrax spores and bring them home and put them in envelopes and send them out.
Yeah, it was a scare tactic.
Everybody knows it.
Yeah, scare tactic. And the other thing that kind of reminds me that nobody investigated at all was the scare tactic. I think before the buildings went down, they were just hit by the airplanes.
Yeah.
The other thing that came out in the news was that they had the codes for Air Force One, and the Air Force One was going to be next. And then, of course, after the two towers fell, they just, we didn't get that story, or that must be a mistake, you know?
Yeah, that was a big lie. And Ari Fleischman, the press secretary, didn't know how to account for the fact that Bush was hiding in a bunker, you know, and so he came up with, well, we had to put Bush in a bunker because we knew that they were going after Air Force One. It was just a total lie, and nobody in the press ever called him on it. And the other thing that was a lie was... they said there was a mole, an Al-Qaeda mole, inside the White House.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and there was... So, all the rules have been waived. The government's gone insane. George Bush wants to create a military dictatorship and turn America into a police state. And I recently was talking with a person who is an academic and works for the Defense Intelligence Agency. And this person just told me yesterday that there's actually a legal precedent for Bush establishing martial law throughout the United States and, you know, anointing himself as a de facto dictator. And the legal basis for this is that before there was a constitution in the United States, the people who were revolting against the British actually considered the United States a country. There was a Declaration of Independence. There was a group of people who had declared themselves to be an independent country before there was a constitution, and the leader of that country was the commander-in-chief. So there's actually a legal precedent for the commander-in-chief, if he wants to declare, you know, to suspend the constitution and declare himself a dictator. And this is a lot of people in the military who are actually decent people, and a lot of people in the CIA and the FBI who are actually decent people, are scared to death that this is what George Bush has up his sleeve.
That's shocking.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes that nobody knows about. And this is, if there was a strategy, and there is a strategy, for putting all these basically social controls into place. These things were, the planning for all this stuff had been going on at least since the embassies were bombed in Kenya and Tanzania and perhaps before.
Yeah, we were just...
It wasn't like all these things were just pulled out of a magician's hat on September 11th.
No, we were just talking to Jim Fetzer, and he urged everyone to go back and watch Wag the Dog again.
You've seen that film. Yeah, yeah. Well, and Hollywood scriptwriters are climbing on board the Bush bandwagon. You know, I mean, they're pumping out the propaganda just as fast as you can. You know, and there's shows on TV now. You know, praising the CIA, and of course, there's nothing praiseworthy about the CIA. It's an anti-democratic institution. It's by its very existence, it subverts the Constitution. It subverts our democracy. And everything it does, everything the CIA does, is illegal. If the communist Chinese had a CIA, and it sent agents into the United States, and we caught them, we would summarily execute them because they were spying on us. Now, the CIA has a $30 billion budget, and it has spies in every country in the world. In fact, its budget is bigger probably than 75% of the gross national products of most of the countries in the world. It's a massive and incredible spy agency, and everything it does is illegal throughout the world. And you have TV shows acting like these are good guys.
Yeah. And not only that, they appear to be funded by many people, but funded by drug money. So no matter what.
Yeah. That's been a CIA signature since it was started, and actually, the United States government has been involved in drug smuggling long before there was a CIA. The military and the State Department were protecting the government of Chiang Kai-shek in China back in the late 1920s and 1930s. And Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalist Chinese, their whole regime, their whole government depended on opium and heroin trade. And they never did a damn thing about it, you know, because that's how they were able to fight the communists and then later the Japanese. So the United States government supporting drug smugglers is like almost like a tradition of our founding fathers, like, you know, slavery or the opium wars of Britain. It just, that's just a historical fact, and it goes on till, you know, right up till today.
Well, you mentioned that you've been writing for a magazine called Counterpunch.
That's right.
And they're on the internet. And this month, it's come to my attention, you have an article, Sex, Drugs, and the CIA.
Yes.
And I'm going to urge everyone to read this, and I'll put a link right next to the interview as well. Would you like to go over a bit of this, though? Because this is MKUltra, like you're talking about the Phoenix program and what we're talking about. Your article is about something that happened maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago, yet these mind control techniques and subversion of the masses through media and other techniques are going on today.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's very timely.
Actually, this story, Sex, Drugs, and the CIA, took place in 1953. That's when the event that I wrote about actually happened. So it's 50 years ago that the CIA began trying to... began clandestinely experimenting on unwitting civilians, American citizens, with LSD to find out if the drug could be used to manipulate people in many different ways. And this story that I wrote, Sex, Drugs, and the CIA, was about a federal narcotic agent named George White, who's very famous, and he was hired in 1952 by Sidney Gottlieb, who ran the MKUltra program for the CIA. White was a federal narcotic agent, and the CIA felt that because he was a narcotic agent and he had access to the drug underworld, and because he was involved in the drug underworld also involves prostitution and pornography and every kind of vice you can imagine, And White was a very extraordinary guy. He was a sociopath, and he was a sadomasochist, and he was ready to do it, work for the CIA. So, using the FBN as a cover, Gottlieb started giving George White vials of LSD and posing as a White would pose as a bohemian artist, or he would pose as a merchant seaman. He had a very attractive wife, and they would invite people, sometimes their friends, sometimes just people from the underworld, sometimes just people from casual acquaintances, either to their apartment or to a CIA safe house that they had set up, and they would give them LSD without the people knowing about it. Well, I'm an investigator and investigative journalist, and I filed an FOIA request with the CIA for documents about what was called the Victims Task Force around 1973, 74, 75, when the Church Committee was holding hearings on CIA abuses. MKUltra was revealed, and in 1979, the CIA decided to do its own internal search for people who had been given surreptitious doses of LSD. So I filed a Freedom of Information Act request of the CIA asking for all the records of this victim's task force. And they didn't want to give them to me. So I filed suit in federal court. And after I filed the suit in the federal court, they sent me about 90 documents, and they sent them real fast, and they forgot to redact them. And so through their error, I was actually able to read the names of the victims. And one of the people who was listed as a victim was a guy named Elliot Smith, and his name was spelled with an E at the end of Smith, and I just went on the computer and I did a search, and there were only two of them in the country. And I called one of them up, and it was him. And he agreed to tell me the whole story about how he met, him and his wife met this CIA agent, George White, back in 1952 and 53 in Greenwich Village in New York, and how they got involved in his LSD experiences. And that's what the article is about. And it's also about how Elliot Smith's wife, Barbara, who was only 19 at the time that George White gave her LSD, eventually suffered a nervous breakdown, and eventually descended into paranoia, and eventually was admitted into a mental hospital. Only like 5 years after she had been given this dose of LSD by George White, and how Elliot Smith, when he was contacted by the Victims Task Force, decided to sue the CIA for doing this to his wife, who had died in 1978 and wasn't even alive anymore. So that's what that article was about, and it talks a little bit about the underworld in New York in that period of time, 1952, 1953, and how George White was able to manipulate people into his, into his lair and seduce them into becoming his friends, and then give them LSD, and they never even knew that it happened. That's what that article's about.
Yeah, shocking, the whole mind control and the whole MKUltra program, because that must have been in the early stages in 53. It went on into the 60s.
Well, yeah, and eventually the CIA, through the Bureau of Narcotics, set up a couple of these LSD safe houses. And they set them up, a couple in New York and a couple in San Francisco and God knows where else. And I know for a fact that the one in New York, which was it was actually managed by the Bureau of Narcotics for the CIA. It was bugged. It had two-way mirror in it, so that you could sit in the next door apartment and actually film people. And it had, the telephones were bugged, and there were spike mics all throughout the room so you could record voices. Well, visiting congressmen who were coming to New York and we're going to go to the UN or do this or do that, would actually stay in this CIA safe house. Which means, if you extrapolate on that, that the CIA has probably been drugging, filming congressmen with, engaged in orgies with prostitutes, at least since the late 1950s, certainly throughout the 1960s, and there's no doubt in my mind that they're still doing it today.
And then blackmailing him if they wanted to.
That's right. And why do you see everybody in Congress going along with this? Why do they all support George Bush? You know, why was there only one congresswoman who had the courage to stand up and vote against the Patriot Act? Why are all our politicians, you know, like little brown shirts working for Bush? Well, because they've all done illegal things and the CIA has the goods on them.
You know,
and
one thing...
If they were to, you know, it's like this guy Condit, you know,
yeah.
I mean, if you step out of line, they can ruin your life in a second.
Yeah,
and
shut
so
you
that's
down.
That's pretty much the sad state of affairs in the United States right now.
And one thing on a similar reasoning you mentioned there was that it bothered me that Jesse Jackson, right after the election, he was making a lot of complaints about the way black people were treated in Florida,
yeah.
And hassled on their way to checks for all sorts of outstanding warrants and whatnot on the way to the election, on the way to the polls.
Yeah.
And of course, it's been documented by several people, Michael Moore and I think Spike Lee, just worked on a documentary on it. But that kind of thing going on, and then. The papers found out about him having that love child with somebody else 19 years ago or whatever.
I
thought that was kind of weird timing that came out then and shut him right up.
Not weird at all, man. Not weird at all. You know, anybody who's in politics is compromised, you know, and mainstream politics. It seems like they've all sold their soul to the devil. I mean... It's really saddening and sickening to see all of this happening. There was a terror attack on September 11th. There were anthrax, these bizarre anthrax outbreaks, you know, which were never solved. But other than that, what's happened? I mean, where are these terrorists? What's happening? You know, I mean... Either this is the most outrageous overreaction in the history of the world, or somebody's got a secret agenda going on here.
you know, it bothers me where they're getting their funding.
Why did we need the biggest government reorganization in 50 years? Why couldn't we just have proceeded the way we were going and do everything that we're still doing?
Yeah, and the funding that went through these banking channels that these people knew the Bush families and they knew the banks in Germany and whatnot, where they got these wire transfers from. I mean, it just reeks of a I wish I had a better word than conspiracy, but
there's no question it's a conspiracy. Look, on the day on September 11th, Bush ordered the FBI to round up all the relatives. Of Bin Laden's relatives in the United States, and all the members of the Saudi royal family. These people were rounded up, and within a day, were hustled out of the United States by the CIA back to Saudi Arabia.
It's almost unbelievable.
Let me finish my thought.
Sorry.
Now, first of all, how did they know where all these people were? You know, and why were they using? I mean, we're talking about more than 100 people. Each one of them had like 6 FBI and 6 CIA agents going out to get them. Instead of investigating this event, they were rounding up all the people who were the major suspects and shuffling them out of the country. 15 of the alleged 19. Suicide bombers on September 11th were Saudis. If anybody was a case officer, for these, you know, 19 bombers, it was probably one of those people that George Bush shuffled out of the United States the day after the terror attacks. Now, anybody who's studied counterintelligence would just die. I mean, at the idea of rounding up these people and sending them out of the country. How could the FBI do that? How could the CIA do that? How could they escort the main suspects out of the country? It's incredible. It's too much to believe.
I was saying it's unbelievable.
Yeah. It reeks. You know, Bush stole the election, and everybody knew, there was this, like, stink on top of him because everybody knew he stole the election down there in Florida. Gore had 500,000 more votes than him in the popular election. Bush stole the election. His popularity was down to like 50% at the best. His popularity had never gotten above 50%. He was an object of ridicule everywhere around the world and at home. And then one day, down go the World Trade Center towers, and up go George Bush's polls to like 95%. He was the only person in the world that benefited from that terror attack. And he's benefited from it continually since it happened, and everybody else is paying the price. Really stinks.
Yeah, I found it shocking that Rudy Giuliani was out on the scene immediately and making a public, and George Bush was hiding, and Cheney hiding for weeks.
Yeah.
Or else
hiding and plotting.
Yeah, or making deals, finalizing. Okay, we pulled that off. Let's get this oil pipeline thing down.
Well, yeah, you know, and Cheney's company Halliburton, they got like $3 billion worth of contracts to provide the material support for the war on terror.
Yeah, right.
Through this company, Brown and Root, which is down there in Texas. How nice. How nice for Cheney, you know, and his company, $3 billion. And meanwhile, the stock market has gone down steadily. We went from having a budget surplus to now having a humongous budget deficit. Everybody who voted for Bush because he promised them a $300 tax rebate has to really, really, really be kicking themselves in the ass, because when the shit hits the fan, they're going to just realize they bought a bill of goods. You know, I mean, the only person that a depression will serve is Bush, because a depression rates as a national emergency. And then Bush can, you know, write a few more secret executive orders and further shore up his powers as a de facto dictator with a country under de facto martial rule, which is where we're at.
And CNN is really an embarrassment to watch these days for the way they're just not reporting facts. They're just going along with the propaganda. How dare you're either with us or against us, supporting this whole agenda of, follow the president, you know.
Yeah. Well, look, it's not just CNN and the media. It's academia. It's big business. There are actually 65% of the American public still supports Bush, and they're still willing to get up and, fight the war on terror. Supposedly, 65%, the latest poll, supports the idea of spying on each other. You know, so there's actually, you know, Americans have been pretty brainwashed by Cold War propaganda over the last 50 years, thanks to, before CNN, you know, the New York Times and NBC and all the network news people. So, you know, it's pretty scary. There's a lot of people out there who really, really don't mind the idea of Bush being a dictator and the United States being an empire ruling the world.
I guess my point being, though, that that's what CNN is reporting, yet I don't talk to anybody who agrees with that. And if I had to do my own poll, it'd be like 99-1 of people being very upset with this and really thinking that they're coming into an Orwellian Big Brother situation here. And what, you know, the cable guys coming in to, and the people installing a telephone are going to be checking out what's on your bookshelf and looking around. I mean,
I talk to these guys, too. I ask them, do you want to do this stuff? And they say, my God, no, you know. I mean, postmen, they want to have postmen in part of this, you know, Operation TIP.
Right, and then wait till you find somebody who doesn't like you and just turns you in.
Right, you know, I mean, well, the postmen really don't want to do it because they depend on their customers for their tips at Christmas. You know, postmen don't want their customers, the people they deliver mail to, being suspicious of them. You know, so it's just going to create what they're doing is creating a paranoid society, and they're splitting it right down the middle. You know, and there's a lot of people out there who are really, I think, a lot of people who will go along with this whole Department of Homeland Security and War on Terror thing, and like you, most of the people I talk to are outraged by it. But when I drive up and down the street, I see flags waving on, you know, 5 out of every 6 houses.
Right, but I guess my point I was trying to make is that CNN reports that 80-90% or, you know, presidential approval rating or people want to go along with this, yet when I talk to people, it doesn't seem to be that at all.
Well, you know, you got to wonder about the polls, but I remember back, and I wrote about this in my Phoenix program book.
Right, right.
Right after the My Lai massacre, you know, William Cayley and his company killed 500 Vietnamese women and children in one little day of you know, wiping out the Viet Cong infrastructure. Newsweek did a poll, and 65% of Americans were not shocked, and they didn't think that Cayley should go to jail. You know, they thought that it was okay. So, you know, I mean, Americans can be... There's a little bit of fascism lurking there underneath the, you know, democratic facade. It's scary.
Yeah, or so we're told that there is, right?
Right, so we're told, you know. I don't know. Maybe it's not a good idea to cite the polls, but... maybe they are cooked. You know, maybe most of the people are going to resist this thing. And God, I hope so. But I can tell you for a fact, all our leaders in Congress are going along with it. And most of the people in the government are going along with it. And so it's happening.
Yeah, well, and they can't. It seems like they can't go against it. They, like Bush is saying to everyone else, like we feel it in Canada and other countries talk about it, you're either with us or against us.
Yeah.
You know, well, what if we're not really cutting, you know, it's not 100%, you know, it's 50-50. Well, we agree with you on some points, but some points we don't. Well, you know, does that make us all of a sudden an enemy of democracy? You know, or just an enemy of America?
Yeah, well, you know, that's what they want, you know. That they want to split the country right down the middle and keep everybody... It's an old, you know, I mean, it's just the oldest trick in the book. How do you, a small elite, powerful, rich elite, control the masses? Well, you split them in half and get them fighting with each other.
Yeah, divide and conquer.
You know, I mean, pit the blacks against the whites, you know. The northerners against the southerners, you know. Get everybody fighting amongst themselves, and it's a lot easier to control them. And that's that you know, it's a setup, and that's what seems to me to be happening right now.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to belabor the point, but all of this happened before in Vietnam in the Phoenix program.
Is your book still in print? Then you mentioned it that it was
the
second printing.
It's available to anybody through an online bookstore, iUniverse.com, or you can go to you can get it at Amazon. Anybody can get it at Amazon.com, or you know, any of those. Any you know, if you have a computer and you have access to the internet, it's just go to your favorite bookseller and you can get it.
Well, yeah, you mentioned you've been writing a few times for Counterpunch. How often are articles coming off your desk?
Oh, you know, actually, my last one, before I wrote this one on sex and drugs, which came out in June, the one that I had written before it was in November. So there was actually like about a 5 or 6 month period there, because I'm working on another book. And after I wrote this November 11th article for Counterpunch, which is actually called The Politics of Terror in America, and it shows how the Department of Homeland Security is based on the Phoenix program, the CIA's Chaos program. It just shows the whole continuum. I went back to writing this book about the old Bureau of Narcotics. I had to finish that book up, and so I can try to get a publisher for it and all that kind of stuff. So.
Right, and what's the title of it?
It's called The Strength of the Wolf, and that's the short title, and then the long title is The Federal Bureau of Narcotics, 1930 to 1968. And it's basically a book about how the intelligence and security agencies of the United States government have always basically controlled drug law enforcement in the United States and wherever the United States has projected overseas its drug law enforcement policies. In a way, it's an extension of the Phoenix Program book. It's to drug law enforcement what Phoenix was to the CIA, the same kind of a book. It's going to reveal, it's full of all new information, basically about how the CIA infiltrated the Bureau of Narcotics and used it for its nefarious purposes.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that for sure.
Well, thank you.
Well, Doug, we've enjoyed your books and your articles. Is there anything coming out in the meantime before that, before your next book will be finished?
Well, I'm working on another updated article about the Department of Homeland Security, and if I can ever get my congressman to talk to me, they don't return my calls, I'll be sending that off to Counterpunch pretty soon. And other than that, just I'm started a sequel to this book about the Narcotics Bureau. I'm doing now work on a book about the DEA and how the CIA infiltrated the DEA.
Yeah, there seems to be no shortage of CIA infiltration in government.
No, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're not. They're just not in the government. They're in private companies that provide services, support services, and have government contracts, mostly in the Defense Department. They're in every bureaucracy and the government. They're just everywhere.
I mean, Air America is probably the most well-known company, but that kind of thing, and they have their cover story. Everybody knows they're CIA, yet they do this other work, and then if they're making a profit, that money is going back in to fund their clandestine effort.
Yep.
And
it's all off the books, and nobody will ever know about it.
Right, and of course, they're with black budgets, nobody really knows how much they've got.
Right, which is the difficult thing about, you know, trying to research the CIA or, you know, doing any of that stuff is researching the CIA and FBI or the military. I mean, how do you research covert operations? How do you get into these secret things? You know, it's really, really, really difficult. And I think that's one of the big reasons that CNN and NBC and the New York Times, you know, they don't even bother doing it because it's, you know, they would actually have to work at it. It's a lot easier just to write about sex scandals. So.
Yeah, it's amazing they don't put Bush and Cheney to the fire more. You know, they just.
They're drowning in scandals, and yet, I mean, the scandals are there of all their corporate rip-offs and everything, and yet they're still being presented as the paragons of virtue. It's incredible. Black is white, and up is down, and, you know, probably the poles are lying, are all cooked too.
Yeah, that's what Bush said. Someone's cooking the books. I was watching
that's
Dana.
That's right, and he accused Gore of fuzzy numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Never
right.
After in the debate.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost embarrassing if you didn't think it was a. If you're trying to do something for your community and make the world a better place and just trying to get a little, you know, your part, no matter how small it is, and yet you see the big picture of these people just completely getting off the hook, billions and trillions of dollars going missing, and guys standing there with their hands, well, we don't know where the money went, and we're not talking, you know?
That's right. It's like Bob Dylan used to say, steal $50 and they put you in jail. Steal $50 million and they make you a king.
Well, I think we're almost getting to the top of the hour here. Is there anything you want to bring up that we didn't get to yet?
Well, no, there's just a million things going on. My advice is, you know, for everybody to just, I mean, for what it's worth, to really, really... stay on top of the developments, things that are happening now, and to not be afraid of joining. You know, Bush has created this Freedom Corps and the Citizen Corps. Are you aware of those organizations?
No, I wasn't.
Back in January, at his State of the Union address, Bush announced the formation of what he called the Freedom Corps. And there's a part of the Freedom Corps which is called the Citizen Corps, all right? And what it's going to do is set up Citizen Corps councils in every community around the country. And it's the Operation TIPS actually falls under the Citizen Corps program, all right? So what you're and all these Citizen Corps councils will be distributing literature to their members and people who joined the Citizen Corps. I joined, and they sent me their handbook, and it tells you how to go about snooping in your neighborhood and spying on your neighbors. So my advice to everybody is to go out and join this goddamn Citizen Corps. Don't let the fascists take over this infrastructure that Bush is setting up. It may seem a little distasteful, but everybody with a conscience and everybody who wants to restore democracy to America is going to have to actually get with these idiotic programs and make sure that they don't fall into the hands of the racists and the anti-Semites and the would-be fascists, who are the people who are lining up to join them. Because if we don't join these stupid things and it's like, you know, participating in your town meetings, you gotta do it. People have gotta get involved at the grassroots level and make sure that Bush is not able to extend his power through Ashcroft and these citizen, core councils into every community in America. You see, that's what Phoenix did in South Vietnam. It set up all these similar kind of programs, and that's how it expanded its informant nets into the villages. And inside these Citizen Corps councils that like the Phoenix program had, that's where they set up their assassination teams. I mean, they actually had assassination teams set up in these, like, benign-sounding, let's protect the people from terrorism organizations. That's what I was telling you about, you know, penetrations and stuff like that. The counterintelligence people in the military and the CIA and the FBI are going to be able to use these Citizen Corps councils as their hammer. And so the only, you know, like I say, as distasteful as it is, the only way to neutralize it is to do what the Viet Cong did, and it's to infiltrate the Phoenix program itself. And that's it may sound bizarre right now, but six months from now, when all these things are in operation, it's not going to be so bizarre.
Right, well,
people got to get with it now before it gets out of hand.
Yeah, because once they, you say people make presentations at these council meetings, and they just come up with slander and lies about somebody, or somebody's the guy's in Al Qaeda, or the guy's a child molester, and then when the people get arrested and there's no trial, nobody misses them.
Yeah, if you got time for one more example, I'll give you a perfect example. Okay?
Sure.
I wrote an article about a congressman in Connecticut named Rob Simmons. Okay, and Rob Simmons was in the CIA, and he was in the Phoenix program with the CIA in Vietnam. And he ran one of these interrogation centers that I was telling you about earlier. Okay? Well, I did an interview with Rob Simmons before he became a congressman when I was writing the Phoenix book. And he was speaking openly to me. And he described how he was after a young girl who was about 16 years old that he suspected of being in the Viet Cong infrastructure. She wasn't a guerrilla. She wasn't carrying a gun. She wasn't shooting anybody or anything like that. But secretly, she was preaching the Viet Cong line. You know, she was saying, you know, she was going to meetings at night, like peace meetings, you know, or stop the war in Iraq meetings, you know, or things that, you know, like the government doesn't want you to do. She was doing those sorts of things, and Rob Simmons, the great CIA agent who ran this interrogation center, didn't like it. And so he dragged her into the interrogation center, and they kept her there for a couple of weeks, and they gave it a third degree. And she didn't crack. She didn't incriminate anybody, and she didn't confess to anything. And so they had to let her go. And I remember doing the interview with this guy. Now, this guy's now a U.S. congressman representing the 2nd District of Connecticut, and he's on the Armed Services Committee. And he's standing there in his room, and he said to me, so she said, oh, I'm just a poor, you know, and he made this like, you know, he was mocking the Vietnamese language, and he was talking in a shrill voice, oh, I'm just a poor peasant girl. And he said, so we kicked her out of the interrogation center, but what we did was, we put her name in the newspaper as being a Viet Cong suspect, and we surveilled her, and that subdued her. Now, that's psychological warfare. And this is what the Department of Homeland Security is all about. It's waging psychological warfare on the American people. The first part of the psychological warfare campaign, which has been going on, just an avalanche of it since September 11th, the first thing is to gather support for this eternal war on terrorism and for Bush's, you know, policies. The second part is to terrorize people who disagree with Bush. The second part of it, just like this congressman, used the newspapers and surveillance to subdue this 16-year-old girl in Vietnam. Well, wake up, America. That's what's happening right here. And you got congressmen who are in the Phoenix program who know exactly how to do this, exactly how to write the legislation. I mean, these are guys like Bob Kerry, who we all know was a senator, and went into a Vietnamese village as part of the Phoenix program and killed 16 innocent women and children. And he didn't lose a day's sleep over it. That's what we're evolving into, is a nation that can go out, and its congressmen and its senators and its presidents can do these sorts of things to people and actually have public support for it and not feel any remorse. So we're really on the brink of, like, turning into a sick society. So anyway, my advice is that before the lunatics get control of everything, is for anybody who's listening to this program, to, you know, any American citizen, to go out and immediately join the Citizen Corps in your council in your community, and get on that council and make sure that the fascists don't take over.
Well, that's a lot to think about, and it's a scary proposition. And the only thing is, I don't doubt you at all, because you've done the research with the Phoenix program, so you're recognizing things that you actually witnessed and researched in writing about it.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I interviewed this guy, Rob Simmons. He became a congressman. You know, I mean, these are facts. It's all facts. And for a person like me who saw it coming and sees it coming, it's incredibly frustrating. You know, I mean, I write articles and I try to tell people what's coming down the pike. I wrote my first article on Homeland Security on October 1st, 3 weeks after the September 11th attacks for Counterpunch. And I got an avalanche of emails from people, all, you know, liberals, left people, environmental people, telling me I was crazy, because in the article I had said that there were going to be military tribunals and people were going to be arrested and put in indefinite detention without charges and without an attorney, because this is what happened in the Phoenix program. You know, I mean, people were, back on October 1st, were telling me I was crazy for saying that was going to happen. Well, guess what? It all happened, and it's all happening. So some of this is my opinion, Len, but a lot of it is just my expertise in what is a pretty arcane subject of how the government conducts covert psychological warfare operations against people.
Yeah, and like you said, psychological operations, it's a mind control.
That's what, and yeah, it brings us right back to mind control, you know, and that's why I was interested in that subject too, and it all fits together, you know, it really does. And don't watch too much TV, you know, read books and find out what's going on.
Okay, well, we'll be looking forward to talking to you again if your next book is out, or possibly when your next article is out. It's always been very interesting, and I will...
Well, I hope you found what I've said worthwhile tonight.
Oh, yeah, I think that people listening to Black Op Radio are in total agreement.
Okay.
In fact, people are just looking for... just to get a better angle, because a lot of reasonable people would not believe what's happening, yet it's happening.
It's everything's in place. They just need to sign the signatures to the documents, and they want to have this Department of Homeland Security. They actually want to have the unveiling ceremony on September 11th of this year.
So who would go against that, right?
You know, so it's kind of morbid in a way, but they've been capitalizing off that tragedy every day, and now they're going to capitalize on it again. You know, I mean, it's almost like grave robbing.
Right,
and,
well...
That's the level that they're at, and so they want to announce and have all the legislation ready by September 11th. So there's not a hell of a lot of time for people to prepare for what's coming. That's September 11th, and what is it now? You know, I mean, it's almost August, so there's not a lot of time.
Well, I'm reminded of something that Fletcher Prodi told me, that, you know, studying these things, always look at the timing. You can look back on something 10 years, but look at the timing of what something happened. And it reminds me, the bombing in Oklahoma was 2 days before the vote for the biggest anti-terrorism funding bill.
Yeah.
And after that happens, who would vote against it? Yet just 1 week earlier, it wasn't going to pass.
Yep. Well, Fletcher understood, and I have to admit that the first book I ever read on covert operations was Secret Team, and it changed my life, and I just started gobbling up every other book that I could. But I remember calling Fletcher, and he was just a wonderful fellow who told me everything, answered all my questions, and was just very forthright and very helpful to me. And, you know, he really summed it up back then when he wrote that book and said there's a secret team. Well, yes, there is a secret team, and it's just gotten a hell of a lot smarter and more powerful over the years, and I'm sure Fletcher would have agreed.
Yeah. Okay, Doug, I think that's probably wrap up this episode of Black Op Radio.
Well, thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to speak to you, and looking forward to talking again in the future.
Okay.
And I'll make links to your website. Do you want to mention it right now, just what it is?
Well, yeah, it's www. www.douglasvalentine.com.
Right, and the counterpunch?
I guess it's www.counterpunch, but it might be .org.
Yeah, I think it's .org. I'll make links to that, and I urge everyone to get Doug's book, Valentine. I was thinking of the Hanoi Hilton, but the name escapes me. What's it called again? The Phoenix Program?
Phoenix Program?
Yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you for recommending the book. I think that in these times especially, it would be really a helpful resource.
Right. And I also heartily recommend anyone reading TDY, which stands for Temporary Duty, which is one hell of a story of someone going to Vietnam and what went on there. And that is
almost a movie. Sex and drugs in the CIA, but without too much sex.
Yeah, well, just from a peripheral at arm's length, this guy goes along. Well, we don't want to give it away as a photographer. Okay. Enough said about that. We'll keep in touch, and anyone interested in these books, look at Amazon.com, or is it iUniverse?
Yes, iUniverse. iUniverse.com.
Great. Okay, Doug. Thank you very much for the interview.
All right, take care.
Okay. Well, I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. I hope we'll be back next week with Anita or Natalie, and we should be back with Jim Fetzer at any rate. So for those of you out there, keep the emails coming. We'd like to hear them, good or bad. Until then, we'll see you next week.